Right, let me figure this out. So you're the last one. And that's me. And that's you. And that's me. So you start.
I go first. Yeah. Okay. Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
we talk about the Revolution.
Oh, cool. I've always been intrigued by the idea of a band that wears costumes or makeup to symbolize their role in the group.
Yeah, just like...
Don't say it, Patrick. Just don't say it. All right, Patrick, I know you've been a fan of Prince.
Oh, yeah.
Prince.
We are all
Prince Rogers Nelson.
Been. Yeah, that's right. Obviously, rest in power, somebody who left the earth way too soon, unfortunately. But I think as time goes on, it's going to be even more clear what a giant he was, and you know how much work he did, even though we consider him a huge superstar and giant musical, you know, personality now. I think as the years continue to unwind, that's even gonna, you know, go farther and farther, because he touched a lot of people and influenced, you know, an incalculable amount of musicians and songwriters and creators. So
Prince, even somebody as great as Prince still needs people to help him out.
That's right.
From time to time, mm-hmm. You know, he still would need collaborators and people to work with. And one of those people is somebody we just interviewed.
Pretty amazing.
This guy by the name of Ricky Peterson, yeah. A touring musician, a producer, a studio musician, a musical director. He's
musical
done
director.
All kinds of stuff, mm-hmm. and a solo artist in his own right.
Yeah, exactly.
He's done all kinds of stuff. He's primarily a keyboardist.
Yeah.
And one of these guys who, you know, most people don't recognized by name, don't hear about, but he's, you know, out there working and making some of the people you know sound even better, including even a guy like Prince, right?
A guy like Prince,
and
yeah.
So you're going to hear that in this portion of the interview we did with Ricky while he's been touring with Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah.
He came through DC and we had a connection, and so we sat down and talked with him. The primary contribution, although apparently there were quite a few, but the primary contribution with Prince was he arranged this song Prince recorded called The Most Beautiful Girl in the World.
Came yeah,
out
that's
in the
right.
mid-90s, mm-hmm. And is one of those songs I think is really well known. And from that period of Prince is probably like a real standout song, but you're going to hear Ricky tell the story of how that song came together. And it's
fascinating.
Really
kind
of, it's pretty great.
It's really cool.
Yeah. So that's part of this episode, is along with some other talk about some of his solo work and so on.
Uh-huh.
This is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
Our thanks to Ricky Peterson for sitting down with
thanks,
us.
Thanks, Ricky. It was awesome.
And let's go to that interview now.
All right.
Been a studio musician, and also now we've been talking about a touring musician too, and
been
for various
juggling
people
juggling for years.
Which do you prefer?
Oh, both. You know what? I believe to tell you the truth, I love the production and musical directing. So I have to say it's both, man. But they both kind of coincide. You know, they're both kind of the same thing. Producing for me is everybody's got a different view on a producer. You know, some producers just make phone calls and get the right guys for the right gig. I like to be hands-on. You know, I'm a hands-on guy. I like to be with the artists. I like to nurture. I like to, you know, work with them and write with them and figure out exactly where they want to be. And that's the same thing when you're musical directing, like when I was doing David Sanborn. It's the same thing. You're mm-hmm. doing it for them, you know, besides yourself, mm-hmm. of course, and mm-hmm. being selfish also. But that's, I want to make these guys sound the best I possibly can. And that's what I love doing, man. I don't need to be the star of the show. I certainly do not need to be that guy, you know, and that's not my forte. You know, even though I've got some records out, which I'm sure we'll talk about,
yeah.
Which was really fun for me, of course. That was very... exciting, man, you know.
Yeah, but, and that kind of sets up one of the questions I had, is how did you choose musicians to play on your album when you got to that point?
Well, I'll tell you exactly what happened. When I'd met through Ben Sidran, I met Tommy La Puma, and mm-hmm. Tommy, he brought Tommy into Minneapolis. And man, and I was living with my brother down in the ghetto, seriously, back then. I think this was 1983, 84, something like okay. that, before I met David or any of those guys. And he brought him to our house, which was just disheveled, man. You know, the place was, but as soon as you opened the front door, there was a grand piano.
Oh, wow.
There's a big Yamaha grand piano, recording equipment everywhere, guitars everywhere. And of course, eventually we got ripped off.
Yeah. <You know? laughs>
But that was the whole thing for me. I think your question was what intrigued me to do that. Ben had me play and produce and write with him on his first records mm-hmm. when all this stuff was coming together. And when La Puma heard that, he just said, well, I'm going to sign him. Which was like, what?
Yeah.
You know, to Warner Brothers at that yeah. time, which yeah. was 1987.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We did the record in 88, and it came out in 89. And 90, that was Night Watch. My first love, and picking the musicians for that was up to the producers.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So they did that first, and of course they got all the heavy LA guys, man, you know, which I was, it actually ended up just being the three of us in the studio, and wow. then we bring in other musicians after we did the basic tracks. So,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But added it was to the so, core for that you me, created. It was just a complete learning experience.
Wow, that's you know? Wild.
Yeah.
And are you working on new stuff currently? Have you had any time to do
I
that?
I have, actually. You really? Know what? I just have to tell you, which I'm very pleased to announce, that I produced a record for a friend of mine, Rocky Robbins, who's a great singer. He's a soul singer from back in the 80s.
Okay.
We had a couple of great hits, but now he had a resurgence, and we had done a record in the last 8 years, just kind of a love fest of doing stuff together, and finally finished it, but never put it out. And I was like, well, I'm not going to put it out. We're not going to find the right people to do it. I got a call from somebody in London saying, do you know where Rocky Robbins is? He happened to be the head of a label
wow.
called Expansion Records by the name of Ralph T, who is a very big R&B fan of the 80s. And he said, I said, yeah, I just so happened to talk to him a lot. and it ended up being something that debuted at number one last 2 weeks ago, February 21st.
Right? No way. Yes, fantastic.
On the R&B label out there that he and I wrote and produced together.
And
Rocky and I.
When were you recording that stuff? Over the past couple of years? Or
well, actually
longer
the past
that?
8 years.
Oh, wow.
You know, but it Amazing. Still lived.
And
you
it
know,
was looking it was, for a home, really, and that's
really
what it needed.
Was, okay. Exactly right. And we weren't about to give it to anybody because they just sit on it and go, be yeah. done with it, you know?
Yeah, that's amazing.
But these guys were so intrigued with Rocky, and I just said, well, just happen to have this.
Whole new album, that's pretty
yeah,
good timing.
Exactly, exactly.
That's really amazing. Good life, yeah. Everybody needs a good life.
Jesus.
Yeah, so I'm very fortunate.
That's so cool.
Let's talk for a minute about some of the people you've worked with.
Yeah, sure.
Right. Let's start with the big one, Prince.
Yeah.
How did Prince. You get involved working with Prince?
Buddy Prince. Well, I have to say that a friend of mine by the name of Jimmy Bowman, who was actually my father's, his father was my father's best friend.
Okay.
So, and his son, we kind of grew up together, and he was very up and into the music. He knew all about music and all about discos and what was going on, and especially in Minneapolis. And what was going on the north side, as opposed to the south side of Minneapolis.
Okay.
And the north side happened to involve Prince and a new thing that was going on. And I met Prince through him. He brought me to a jam session.
Oh, wow.
Over at his house that was actually at one of his manager's house in Edina, Minnesota. And went downstairs and jammed with him a few times, you know, did it for a few weeks. And this is when he was putting together the Revolution.
Oh, okay.
Okay,
and this was after the fact that he had put out For You.
Okay.
I should back up a little bit because... Okay. When I was doing commercials and singing jingles at this place called Sound 80, Prince happened to be in there finishing the works for For You at one of the studios across the hall from us doing that. We never really ran into each other until I went and did these rehearsals or these jam sessions with him. And that's how I met Prince. And after about 2 or 3 weeks, he brought me upstairs with his manager and said, "Well, you know, we're putting this band together. We're wondering if you were interested in doing it." And I kind of knew what music he was doing, you know, the stuff that it would entail.
Yeah.
But there was only one thing that was a little strange for me is that right off the bat went negative a little bit and said, "Well, this is what you can't do."
Ah.
Mm.
And I'm like, "Well, what do you mean what I can't do?" You know? Besides the fact knowing what I would play and what I would have to do on stage and dance and do all, you know, all the little moves and do all that stuff, that wasn't me, man.
And wear surgical scrubs or something?
Oh, my God. And that was actually Matt's thing. Matt's thing. He brought that into the picture. But I would have been somebody else. I would have done something else or been somebody else at that point, you know?
Right.
And I said, "No, I can't do it."
Mm-hmm.
And he always respected me for that, man.
Is that right?
He respected me for that. And we're not, I mean, we don't really become friends with Prince, you know?
No, I would imagine.
Yeah. but he always had respect. Then when he had the big hit with Purple Rain and he built Paisley Park.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'm popping my peas
good.
Sorry. Okay. That's a hard one. Paisley Park.
It is.
Come on, without popping peas.
Yeah, you're going to have to pop peas on that.
Learn that in jingle school. Anyways, that's when he invited me to come to Paisley Park and say, you know, when he was just building the place, I went over there because a lot of my friends were working for him. One of my dearest friends, Tom Tucker, was his main engineer at the time.
Hmm.
I mean, there's a bunch of different engineers that worked for him.
Yeah.
But when it finally came to the fruition of him going, "Oh, well, we can make money doing this."
Yeah.
And this is when all the people started coming in and he hadn't needed the manager for the, you know, for the studios and all that, which was Tom Tucker and who was the main engineer. I got a office upstairs and I had a little studio in there with ADATs and all sorts of great stuff. And that's when, you know, we would bring in Fine Young Cannibals. I worked with David Z, who was David Rifkin. I don't know if you know that name.
I do, yeah.
And I worked with him for many years, producing a lot of different people, man. He did, like, Fine Young Cannibals, like I said. And of course, there's Was Not Was. There was all sorts of people when they were just starting back in the 80s, you know, late 80s and stuff, and into the 90s. And that was my introduction to Prince. And he invited me to... which I'm sure you're going to ask about the most beautiful girl in the world.
Yep. We're getting there.
I'm sorry, I'm doing all the talking.
But, no, go for it.
It happened to be that, you know, he was watching what I was doing. I had George Benson in there. I had, you know, and I was doing a lot of stuff with Tommy, and it was a very intriguing place to be.
I bet.
We were at Paisley Park, Prince, you know, that's a big deal. So, especially then.
Yeah, I would imagine.
He had, you know, a bunch of hits at that time.
Yeah.
Well, one of the last hits that he had was that song, mm-hmm. Most Beautiful Girl, and happened to be something that he handed me after I had done a few things for Paisley Park Records. He was kind of watching what I was doing, and he threw me a couple of bones saying, well, why don't you produce this, which was the Mavis Staples record,
uh-huh.
You know, called The Voice.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, and yeah. I was very happy to do
it. It's a good bone. Yeah.
It's a pretty good bone. And then, let's see, Nona Gay, mm-hmm. which is Marvin Gaye's daughter. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I produced something for her, and then I did something for one of his singers in the band, who was Rosie Gaines, who sang Diamonds and Pearls
with
him.
Oh, mm-hmm. yeah, right.
Which was one of, you know, the in that Hitsville era, and so I produced her record. And then he said, do something with this, and handed me this thing that I couldn't even decipher, except for his vocal and his guitar work. I mean, there were keyboards on there that I couldn't decipher, so I kind of made it up as I went along. It was close to what he had going, but I couldn't really hear what he was doing because it was just kind of muddy or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And so I ended up doing that and taking the song from what he had done with the guitar part and all his great vocals that he had done on that and put a whole nother track to it.
Wow.
With mostly his band. And of course, my little brother Paul played bass on it mm-hmm. also. That's a whole nother story.
Yeah.
Anyways, that was my introduction for Prince and me being the only guy who's ever really produced anything for him.
Wow.
You know, at that mm-hmm. at that time, that happened to be one of his last number one hits.
It's kind of amazing.
And that was when he had the thing on his cheek, the slave and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And it wasn't going by Prince. He was going by
the symbol.
We called him Tap Calf. mostly everybody called him Boss. I just said, how you doing, man? You know, that was about the musician part of me. You know, I couldn't quite go Boss yet. But even though he was, you know, really. So that was my thing that's with wild. Prince. And then it went on from there. And I did Crystal Ball. I did Gold. I did, you know, a couple other records with him. We had a ball. He was just elated with it because it was epic, you know?
Yep.
So.
And it sounds like you established a musical connection with him really early on, right?
It was a mutual respect, man. Absolutely. Cool. I mean, we never really hung out, you know? He had a whole other thing going on.
I would
imagine. So did I,
you
know?
Yeah.
I mean, it was, but boy, when we got together, it was, you can hear it for yourself.
That's wonderful.
Those records,
pretty
man.
Wild.
Yeah.
How soon did you work with him before his death?
Oh, it had been 20 years.
Oh, it had been?
Oh,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
It was the last thing I did with him. The last time I saw him, actually, I was with Bonnie Raitt. I was playing with Bonnie. Ah.
Okay.
And we played the Hollywood Bowl, and he was there. He came to see us with his, at that time, his entourage and his latest girlfriend. And that had to be 2011.
Okay.
But I had not been to Paisley Park since 99. You know?
Okay.
And that my thing happened to the late 80s and 90s.
No, that period. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
and
you're right. That
I
was kind of his last big fertile period.
Yeah. Yeah. So where were you when you heard the news?
In my bed. When I got a phone call from a person that was working very closely with him on the voice and piano concerts that he was doing at that point. And he was, I don't want to mention any names, but he was very close in working with him, and he just said, he called me up on the phone. I was one of the first ones he called, and he said, I think Prince died. Hmm. And we're going, no, you know, that's just nonsense, you know. And all of a sudden, boom, it hit. And it was devastating to everybody. And most of the guys that I knew in the Revolution band, of course, Matt Fink and Bobby Z and Wendy and Lisa and all these people that I had jammed with back in 1983 or whatever it was, you know, I invited them all to a joint where we could go because we knew we'd be hounded by the press at this point, you know. And I just said, let's go find a safe haven where nobody can come anywhere near us. And we did find it. And we all sat and, you know, did our weeping and whatever and talking and reminiscing and why and whatever. It's tough, man. That's a tough deal. Yeah. Tough deal. You know, that's a really hard thing to think about, man.
Yeah. You know, it is.
Because it's like you don't know, man. You don't know what happened. Nobody knows what happened. Right. There's a lot of conspiracy theories, you know. So
probably never will know, really. Yeah.
No, not until we go and see him.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. And we'll get the straight story. Yeah. You'll be able to talk to him, us. But.
Well, sure he will. He'll be wide open to everybody, there I'm you sure, go. Man.
I like that.
Yeah.
Okay, there you go. I don't know how many people out there can honestly claim to have a close working relationship with Prince. I mean, Prince was one of those guys who, yes, he had like a lot of collaborators, but you always got the sense that he was really calling all the shots and in control. You know, the collaborators might not even be the right word. You know, he had sort of his favorite musicians and people who were close to him musically, mm-hmm. but it was always like, you got the sense like Prince was the boss. In fact, Ricky said that, but in this case, like it sounds like he really gave Ricky some real latitude in sort of how he put stuff together. So,
he did. And, you know, I think it's really interesting that, you know, by all accounts, there was an opportunity Ricky could have to join the Revolution at that time when he's putting it together. But also he, you know, you heard him say it. He knew how Prince worked and that was going to be really rigid, and he kind of knew that wasn't for him. So, you know, it's cool that you have that kind of foresight, but man, what a chance. Like, that's incredible.
That's still pretty amazing to really turn that down. Yeah,
it really is. And you know, we kind of ended that on the sad note, but it was, you know, it was kind of neat that he still stays in touch with those people, and they kind of got together afterwards and consoled each other. There's that name in this episode that got dropped too that I think is really interesting, the Fine Young Cannibals. That's like a band we've never really talked about on this show, but it's kind of a cool band. I mean, they were really kind of unique, and I don't know. I don't think a lot of people really talk about them, but, you know, two guys from the English Beat and Roland Gift, who is a really interesting singer. We should spend some time on
that. Came out of the English Beat, and they also have an interesting distinction in that I believe they put out two albums, if I'm remembering correctly. But the second one was a huge hit in the U.S.
Massive.
It was a huge hit, and they never followed it up.
It didn't. It's so interesting. And you'll still hear it, you know, in a shopping mall or on the radio or, you know, wherever now. And you can instantly recognize that's a Fine Young Cannibals.
That almost never happens where a band has just a major hit album like that and then just disappears.
It's one of the most interesting stories,
And that was what? Going on 30 years ago?
Going about 30 years. We're talking the late 80s, or early, well, mid 80s, really. It's kind of amazing.
Mid, late 80s, interesting stuff.
It really is. That just kind of popped up with Paisley Park, and they had an office there and everything. It's really fascinating. Yeah.
Love it. So there's more of this interview.
A lot more.
With Ricky Peterson. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow, we're going to get into some other people he's worked with. And Some more famous names, but also some kind of obscure names, things like that. His career has been all over the place, right? Really cool stuff. So you're going to want to hear that.
You will.
You know, if anything, I think it just gives you like an insight that you don't get from, you know, a lot of interviews. Again, somebody who's sort of a supporting player and worked with so many fascinating people. It's really,
really
cool
is
stuff.
An interesting look into that ecosystem you mentioned. Yeah.
All right. So please listen again tomorrow and the rest of the week and frequently. And also let us know what you think about the interview or Prince or anything in general. You can email us rock@suburbspod.com or you can call 612-440-1984, which is actually a Minneapolis exchange, by the way.
Yeah, that's interesting.
We have a whole team of people in Minneapolis
that's right.
who answer the phones. Yeah. So you can do that, or you can find us on the social medias of Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those at Suburbs Pod. Two more things I want to mention. One is that we have a live event coming up.
Oh, yeah.
A Rock in the Suburbs live taping of our podcast with special guest Don Zintara of Inner Ear Studios, and work closely with Discord Records, a lot of those bands on Discord, and he recorded them. And it's going to be a fascinating conversation. And Don's also going to play some of his own music.
Yeah, which is cool stuff.
And you need to get tickets to this. So
just pick up a ticket.
You should go to suburbspod.com and you'll find the link there to buy the tickets. They're only $5.
Right, cheap.
And I'm not sure that you have to have them in advance, but it's probably going to sell out. So you probably want to do
that. It's a small arena.
I think that's the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
If you...
Better safe than sorry.
So yeah, so that's where you want to go. Again, go to suburbspod.com, find the link. The live show is on Thursday, April 4th at 7 p.m., I want to say.
Somewhere
it's
around
at Spaces in Chevy Chase, Maryland.
And that's located pretty much anywhere on the East Coast. You know, you can get to Chevy Chase within 7-8 hours. Yeah.
I think there's like, I believe there's like special charter buses that'll take you right to Chevy Chase.
Yeah, I think
right?
There's a bus coming, down from somewhere.
From anywhere you might be. Just Grand Rapids. On that Chevy Chase bus.
There's a Grand Rapids group coming on a tour bus.
Oh, yeah. Of course it will be. So, all right. So check that out. And then also, just speaking of the show overall, you can support the show and become a patron by going to patreon.com/suburbspod, and there you'll see ways you can contribute and also get some stuff in return for that contribution. So check that out. All right, let's get out of here. Let's get on to part 3 of the interview with Ricky Peterson. It's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
And I'm Patrick Foss.
And we'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
As soon as you opened the front door, there was a grand piano.